I will recognize the Minister of Finance.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the
Finance Minister Peter Bethlen Falvey. Just minutes ago, we are live on location here. You're listening to The Rush, and I'm Rashmi Nair with you this afternoon as the Ontario Finance Minister begins to table the 2023 budget. This is a majority Ford government. We are living in inflationary times with a recession on the brink, potentially sometime this year, maybe not, but we have rising interest rates. Everything costs more, and you're getting less for every dollar you spend in every aspect of life right now. So where are we going to invest our hard-earned tax dollars, and how are we going to move Ontario forward? Joining us live as we go through the details of this budget is Brett House. Brett House is the professor of professional practice and economics at Columbia Business School and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College. He helps us make dollars and cents of all of the big financial stories in our lives. And we're just going to ride this wave, Brett, as the details start to come out, the 2023 budget being tabled and the discussions coming out of it. So we have CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Siobhan Morris, who was locked up with the budget details, as journalists have that opportunity for about an hour or two before it is tabled to be able to go through the fine details. And bring us the highlights of it. So we have some notes from Siobhan that we can discuss. Brett, if anything is surprising or shocking, we have producer Ben Harrison keeping his eyes on CP24, Mike Catherwood's in the control room as well. So anything that's not what we expected, we'll bring to you live. We're listening into the finance minister, but we have some numbers to already discuss. Why not put them to Brett House? Appreciate you making time for us today. I mean, how are you feeling on budget day? Is this fun for economists?
Oh, yeah, this is, one of our big days of the year, seeing how policy is going to get reset for the next 12 months and how lots of big words are getting translated into numbers that actually affect people's lives. So it's a real pleasure to be on with you.
And newsrooms cover it for about 24 hours. Do you continue to talk about it after that?
Absolutely, because the budget is a statement of intent, yeah. But then there's the actual follow through and the execution bills that put that intent into action. And sometimes you see some real gaps between those lofty goals in the budget and how they get translated into real movement on the ground. You also see some things that don't get included in those initial implementation bills. Sometimes they get delayed or significantly reconfigured, and they end up meaning something different than they did on their first announcement.
So what Siobhan Morris with CTV News is pulling from the details of the finance minister's budget being tabled right now is that this is the biggest spending budget in Ontario's history, and it's with a Ford majority government. A lot of it going into health spending, $425 million over 3 years for mental health and addiction, $800 million in base funding for hospitals, $72 million to surgical clinics that cover OHIP fees in the effort to reduce surgical backlogs. If we look at that, it looks like the triple digit millions are in the public health system, but then there's $72 million that will help those private clinics that are covered by OHIP that would help reduce surgical backlogs. Is this something that you anticipated, Brett?
Well, I think the big headline that the Ford government was keen to put out is that this would be a budget that would be delivered in the context of restraint. And I think despite the headline that it's the biggest spending budget we've ever seen, in some ways, of course it is. With the kind of inflation we've had over the last year and a half or so, the cost of everything has gone up. And so even if you were holding constant the goods and services that you were spending on, that would have inflated the numbers in dollar terms from what we saw even a year ago. So it's about $6 billion more than last time around, but I think you can still call it a budget under that major theme of restraint, because that's still a relatively small increase in a time of what have otherwise been pretty big price escalations.
Oh, that's interesting. A valuable takeaway, because then I anticipate other regions will have similar budgets, right? We're going to be seeing government spending more because of the inflationary period we're in.
Well, yes and no. You know, if they have the wherewithal to raise taxes and fund greater spending, then they probably will. But, you know, one of the big things that I'm seeing just on a quick glance at the budget is very little to no relief for cities that are continuing to face shortfalls related to extra new things they had to do around the pandemic and some of their revenue generation activities that are seeing much smaller numbers than they did in the past. And of course, the first thing that comes to mind is transit in Toronto, where numbers like most major cities are way down from where they were in 2019.
Thinking about Toronto specifically, Brett, how much of a jab is it to not have a bailout for Toronto in this provincial budget?
Well, you know, I haven't read through all of the details, so there might be some throat clearing somewhere in all the verbiage that says, despite the numbers not being what we would have hoped for, that they're beginning to initiate a bigger process about how the province and the cities relate to one another in terms of fiscal spending. But absent that, you know, which would be a promise rather than cold hard cash, we have got a fundamental structural issue that will have to be dealt with here. And if it's not in the budget now, then we need to keep that discussion at the forefront, because as in the entire country, the cities are where most Canadians and most Ontarians live, and it's where new immigrants are coming to, and we desperately need to figure out that fiscal compact between the provinces and the cities in a much more sustainable way. So it might be deferred here, but it's not going to go away.
Do you notice anything surprising in the capital spending breakdown that we got from Siobhan Morris with CTV News? We're looking at over the next 10 years, just over $70 billion on transit, $48 billion on hospital expansions, almost almost $28 billion for highway projects, and $15 billion to expand and renew schools. To me, that seems like the standard investments that you see in a provincial budget. Anything surprising there to you, Brett?
Well, it didn't particularly stand out to me beyond the notion that that $70 billion is in some ways a lot of accumulated deferred spending that should have happened a long time ago. So we're still playing a bit of catch up there. I am curious to look under the hood of the highway financing to know what that means for the controversial highway connector and the 413. I, you know, neither strike me as necessary spending, and you know, are potentially areas where resources could have been diverted to other more urgent causes around mental, physical health, educational services, social services in the cities where those budgets are hurting.
We are just climbing that mountain. Finance Minister Peter Bethlenfalvy is promising to get us there, and we are going over the 2023 Ontario budget. It's been tabled, and we have some of the details. Joining us live here on The Rush on Newstalk 1010 Toronto to break down the budget is Brett House, Professor of Professional Practice and Economics at Columbia Business School, and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College, always helping us make dollars and cents of the news. And this budget has a lot of details to go through here, Brett. We just have some of the highlights. But how would you describe what's coming down the pipe right now? What is in Ontario's future economically?
Well, you know, this budget is a steady as it goes budget in a lot of ways. It's following through on a big set of issues and announcements that already preceded it in terms of where spending would be going, where tax raising powers either would be changed or kept on hold. From a city's perspective, you know, I'm sort of sad to see that there was no relief provided around the removal of development charges at the same time as cities are expected to respond really forcefully to our housing crisis, where we have such a big deficit of housing units, especially with population growing. We now know as rapidly as it has in Canadian history. The other thing that I think is a real miss, and you know, some folks might disagree, is the continued insistence on removing the license plate charge. It's one of the few ways that, you know, we tax drivers directly for the cost of providing those $1 billion in roads infrastructure. We at the same time, you know, ask transit riders to pay a fee every time they get on. That seemed to me like one of the few ways in which we level the playing field between people who rely on transit and people who drive. And getting that playing field right is really important if we're going to get carbon emissions down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most people could see that it helped get votes, right? And now we have a majority government. So the party might say it worked, but the economists, I take your point. We don't need to remove taxation. We need more revenue streams here. But even with removing those license fees, the province is promising a path to a balanced budget. We're looking at 2025 as the end goal here, 3 years earlier than projected last year. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it is really contingent on how things develop this year in terms of whether we get a further slowdown in growth or not. As some have noted, the Canadian economy is kind of defying gravity so far in the face of the interest rate hikes we've had. Most economists in the latter part of 2022 were expecting by now we'd be starting to see signs of a recession coming into the economy, or certainly a slowdown in the labor market as a bit of a precursor to a possible recession. And we haven't seen either of those things in spades. We got a little bit of a weak end to 2022, but still stronger than we otherwise would have projected. And that expectation of a balanced budget earlier than expected hinges critically on how the economy continues to grow. If it's weaker than they're laying out here, and which reflects forecast consensus, then you know that balance might be a little further off, and appropriately so, because government spending should respond to cushion some of the blow if growth comes in lower than we hope.
Is the next year or two difficult to forecast financially because of so many things up in the air, even on a global stage?
Well, you know, I'm always reluctant to claim some kind of exceptionalism about any time. It's always difficult to look in the crystal ball and forecast.
But that, okay.
that's entirely the job of economists who are opining on where the world is going and what we should do in response to that. So we have to try to look over the horizon. And I think what we can say is that some of the debate between are we going to have a recession or not is maybe splitting hairs. You know, we are going to have slower growth this year and probably next year than we had the two previous years as we opened up from the pandemic. The question will be, you know, does it go mildly negative? Does it stay mildly positive? Either way, it feels kind of meh compared to the last few years. So does it feel a little more meh or a little less meh? That's going to be hard to pin down. But what we need to do is start now laying the groundwork for longer term growth, prosperity, and investment. And we saw some of that being done on the capital spending side here in this budget. But where it didn't match up with rhetoric is the discussions for the last couple of weeks from the minister saying this is going to be a budget that invests in Ontario growth. That's harder to see here.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, they're saying that, you know, we're going to hit a deficit this year, 2023-24, at like $1.3 billion, aiming for a surplus then in the next year, 2024-25, of $200 million. And I'm wondering, like, when they anticipate that, the surplus isn't as big as the deficit. I mean, how much more of a head could a government find itself before it's accused of not spending enough money, you know?
Well, you know, there are a number of fronts where this government hasn't followed through on spending money it's had earmarked for it, or that it itself has identified as dedicated budgets. I think that $200 million surplus is a bit of a rounding error. It's more of a political number where they decided they wanted to show a surplus earlier than expected. Whether we get there or not, or whether we miss it slightly, it's kind of immaterial when you've gone from nearly an $18 billion budget deficit last year to down to 1.3 and then a tiny surplus. The fact is the numbers have moved massively into the black. The second question is, should they be so quite far in the black? Should we be spending more now to get the growth and the improvement in welfare that we need farther along? That's the tougher question that I don't think this budget really answers.
Yeah. And I appreciate you saying, you know, want to show a surplus, because I always wonder about that. I get the political motivation, but I hear from listeners too, Brett, who believe that we are spending too much and going in the red is not what the government should be doing. Whereas I think I'm in the red in my financial personal life. My household is in the red. Is it possible for a government to operate not in the red?
Well, it depends on the level of government. The federal government can operate in a really wide range of deficit and surplus settings. As you tier down to lower levels of government that have more limited taxation powers and more limited wherewithal, when you talk about cities, they can't really borrow in a substantial way. They've got to match up spending with incoming revenues on a year-to-year basis more closely. Ontario is one of the highest credit ratings in the world. It can issue debt, it can run deficits. But as always, whether you're in deficit or surplus, the question has to be, is the spending efficient? Is it effective? Is it increasing productivity? Is it making Ontarians smarter, more skilled, more able to deal with shocks that are coming in the future? Because they'll keep coming. And it's a question of whether we're building the resilience to deal with them or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to talk to my six-year-old about roses and thorns. I think with this budget, the roses would be a big investment in health spending. I didn't anticipate hundreds of millions on mental health and addiction, but I guess the thorn would be no money for Toronto. What's your takeaway, Brett? Roses and thorns.
Yeah, I think that that's a good breakdown. And, you know, some of that health spending we've seen advertised on the billboards on the Gardner and other parts of Southern Ontario over the last few weeks. So that was pretty well telegraphed. But I certainly held out hope that a compact on the fiscal front with the cities would be a little more developed here. And I think as the biggest city in Canada, the new mayor, who, you know, coincidentally is the one elected official in Canada who is elected by more people than any other in direct votes. So they have a real platform to argue or discuss with Queen's Park on how this fiscal arrangement is going to keep changing going forward, because this isn't sustainable, what we've seen right here.
Great point on the mayor. And it depends on the voter turnout. June 26th is the by-election. Brett House, we appreciate you so much. Thank you for joining us on Budget Day.
Great to speak.
Brett House is a professor of professional practice and economics at Columbia Business School and a fellow with the Public Policy Forum, the Monk School, and Massey College.